started a series about 2 weeks ago. Last week we had Jesse speaking here, and if you were here, didn't you do a great job? Yeah. Jesse, one of our youth, it was just a privilege to have them participate in the service and share their gifts also. But the thing I talked about 2 weeks ago is just, we talk about New Year's resolutions, we talk about changes, and we're talking about changes. And the conclusion that I came to is sometimes if you know what needs to be done, you kind of just have to do it. You have to make it happen. And the one thing that I've brought along with that is that God is always with us. We don't have to be afraid when we're looking at changes, when we're trying to make something happen. God is with us. God is unchanging. The circumstances around us may change. We may change. Things may change us. God is unchanging. God is a constant. And I want to put that out there again at the beginning of this message just to remind you, it's great to hang on to, and so maybe you will get nothing else out of anything that I say. God is unchanging, and God is with you constantly. So this week I want to speak a little bit more directly about what about those changes that are imposed upon us? What about those changes that we don't really get a choice in? There's change, and we have to adapt to it. What do we do with those things? Well, you've probably heard the line before, and I'm going to remind you, admitting it is the first step. A lot of times you hear that associated with recovery and sometimes associated when we want to make a change. But I think in any situation where there is a significant shift in life, we have to kind of acknowledge it. Admitting it is the first step. Now, I've said this jokingly a number of times. I love it when I see somebody saying, now, what was it I was going to do? I must be losing my mind. And then you go, whoosh, now admitting it is the first step. It's a lot of fun, right? I've heard some of you say, well, Trubisky's just playing like trash. Whoosh, admitting it is the first step. But seriously, I think if we want to see something change, if we want to say this is what reality is, sometimes the difficult part is acknowledging that, is admitting that, is recognizing that, and sometimes just verbalizing it. There are many times that we're in a situation that just happened, and maybe it's not ideal, and we're in the midst of it. And we can know that something's wrong, and we can feel that something's wrong, but there's something about acknowledging it, there's something about verbalizing it that I think helps us on the steps that it takes to move forward. You've done this before. I think almost everybody has at some point. You know something's wrong and you don't want to face it. You know something's different, but it's hard to acknowledge it. You've been suffering maybe in some situation and it's painful to you, but you're afraid or maybe you're too hurt to name it to someone else. And so I'm saying acknowledging it is the first step. In other words, sometimes you have to face it. You have to face that change. You have to face that thing that's different. You have to face that scary, whatever the circumstance is in life, in order to move forward. But once we name it, once we acknowledge it, once we face it, it can feel like defeat then, right? I mean, sometimes if we put words to it, it feels like, okay, here's what's wrong. Here's what I'm dealing with. And now that I've said it, you can see how overwhelming it is. And I'm defeated by it. I'm overcome by it. It can feel like if we name it, we're letting go maybe that little bit of sense of security that comes in trying to run or hide from it. And if we just say it out loud, then we've lost. If we acknowledge it to someone else, then we're done. That was the final step that we were holding on to. Sometimes we feel like if we say, this has changed, and now I've got to go forward, it can feel like defeat. So how do we prevent that from happening? How do we acknowledge when something is wrong and not be defeated by it? I think there's a secret, and I find it in that story that Carol was sharing with the children of David and Goliath. Now, David and Goliath is a story that many of you learned in Sunday school, or many of you heard just kind of in a roundabout way because it's so popular, it has different iterations that circulate. Or you happen to be reading 1 Samuel last week and you just came across chapter 17. One way or another, many of you are familiar with the story of wee little David, tiny little David. David was just about like 6 inches high, and Goliath was 1 million feet tall. It was worse than an ant taking on an airplane. It was, okay, I exaggerate, but that's the premise of the story. But it goes like this in 1 Samuel 17. The Philistines gathered their forces. Philistines, who are they? Glad you asked. Let's just say the enemies of Israel. Israel, who's that? Glad you asked. Okay, long story made really short. God's chosen people, the Israelites. God's people that were trusting him and following him, those were the Israelites. All right. Philistines. Well, as Carol said, they were just trying to conquer and look for more territory. They weren't necessarily following God's ways, and so they're the bad guys. Israelites, good guys. Philistines, bad guys. Got it? Good. Here we go. So, the Philistines gathered their forces for war and assembled at some place in Judah. The Philistines occupied one hill, and the Israelites another, with a valley between them. So for this morning, we could say, like, we've got Israelites over here and Philistines over here, but I don't want to say anybody's good or bad guy, but just, you know, setting the picture, right? One hill is the Israelites, one hill is the Philistines. They're at war with each other, so there's this valley space in between them. A champion, like a big warrior, like the first guy we're going to put out front, named Goliath, who is from Gath, because that's important to know, came out of the Philistine camp. His height, can you believe this? His height was 6 cubits. A cubit is approximately 1 billion feet. Listen, I don't know. There's even debate as to how big a cubit was and how tall Goliath was. Let's just say he was enormous. Okay? For the purposes of this story, it helps us to know he was just enormous. He was like an extremely tall version of the Hulk. He had a bronze helmet on his head and wore a coat of scale armor, probably from dragons. And it weighed about 5,000 shekels, because we all know what shekels weigh. On his legs, he wore bronze greaves, and a bronze javelin was slung on his back. His skin was probably the color bronze. His spear shaft was like a weaver's rod, and its iron point weighed 600 shekels. His shield bearer went ahead of him. And why is that significant? Because listen, this guy was so big, like with all his armor and his giant spear, he's like, I still need a shield. And there's a guy dedicated, like a normal soldier, a normal-sized person, ready for war. He's like, I'm just going to carry your shield. This, by the way, is where the idea of a meat shield was invented, because if that shield was taken away, anyhow. Goliath stood on the Philistine side and shouted to the ranks of Israel, why do you come out and line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And are you not the servants of Saul? Choose a man and have him come down to me. Kya, kya, kya. If he's able to fight me and kill me, we, the Philistines, will become your subjects. But if I overcome and kill him, you will serve us. Then the Philistine said, this day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other. So on hearing his words, Saul and all the Israelites that were brave and ready for battle, it says right in the scripture, were dismayed and terrified. So here's the picture, right? Super enormous warrior king champion of all time, like the biggest and the baddest, and you just never want to fight. And this entire army of Israel, and he's saying, hey, I'll challenge you one-on-one, right? You just send someone out, and I'll take them. And if I don't, we lose. Everybody else in the army, we lose. Just, let's go, pick one person. It says, for 40 days, the Philistine came forward every morning and every evening and took his stand, and I imagine sent out the same type of taunts and the same type of invitation and said, Neener, you're all chickens. I think that's in scripture. David, remember, David was approximately 0.5 cubit tall and weighed 2.25 cubit. I don't know. But David was the youngest of the sons of Jesse. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. David was a shepherd. David was not exactly what you picture as a warrior type. So David was just this wee little thing and a young wee little thing and a not mighty warrior wee little young thing. And he said to Saul, the king at the time, your servant, that's me, has been keeping his father's sheep. And when a lion or a bear carried off a sheep from the flock, I went and I killed it. I went after it. I struck it and I rescued the sheep from its mouth. When the beast turned on me, I'd seize it by its hair or strike it and kill it. Your servant, again, that's me, has killed both the lion and the bear, much like the Vikings killed the bears and the lions. And this uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them because he has defied the armies of the living God. There is an entire army of Israelites. There are trained fighters. There are guards of the king because the king is there. And by the way, there's a king. What are we told about Saul, who was the king? That he was taller than anyone else. In a crowd, he stood at least a head above everyone. That he was a mighty man. That they looked at him and said, this guy ought to be king. And Saul, kingly as he is, and guards, guardly as they are, and army-ish as they all are, no one will stand up and fight Goliath. And so here comes, excuse me, Weenie David. He's like, you got to do something about this. I imagine that he looked at Saul and just casually said, I've killed lions, and I've killed bears, and I've killed packers, and I'm going to kill him too. And Saul was like, this man needs help, okay? Somebody get this young boy some help, because there's no way in the world. So David took his staff. The king agreed he could go out. And fast forwarding, David took his staff in his hands, and he got smooth stones. And of course, they offered him all sorts of armor, and they begrudgingly said, you can go out. And everybody just kind of started praying and making the sign of the cross, and they're like, he is gone, and we will mourn David this day. And he's like, I don't want your armor, and I don't need your weapons, and you guys go ahead and keep hiding. I'm going to go take this on, all right? I'll be right back. So David took out his staff, his shepherding staff, the mightiest of weapons. And he chose 5 smooth stones from the stream, and he put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag. I'm sorry, his shepherd's bag. And with his sling in his hand, he approached, that is, started to go towards the Philistine, started to go towards Goliath. David said to him, you come against me with sword and spear and javelin. But I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty. In other words, you can have all the weapons you want. I've got a God. And I really wanted to show that clip from Avengers where they're standing in the face of Loki and he's like, I am the most powerful being in the world. And they're like, yeah, we've got a Hulk. And Hulk comes in and just smashes his face into the ground. But I didn't. So there you have it. So he says, you come against me with sword and spear, but I come against you in the name of the Lord, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands. I'll strike you down, and I'll cut off your head. Now, strategist, not so much, because he just revealed his whole plan, but confident, yeah. This very day, I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there's a God in Israel. And everyone gathered here will know that it is not because of sword, and it is not because of spear that the Lord saves, but that the battle is the Lord's. He will give all of you into our hands. And so let me sum up how this ends. Basically, Goliath is like, bah, 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 bah. You are a wee little weenie of a man, and I'm going to smush you, and I'm going to enjoy it. In fact, I'm going to pick you up and grind you like this between my fingers. And David's like, oh yeah? Stone to the head. And Goliath falls down. Now, what I want to do here is get into the death of Goliath, because it's really graphic. And he goes like, no, I'm kidding. Okay? In the end, little David, tiny David, half a cubit David, defeats 472 cubit Goliath. But here's what's going on in the story that I want to illustrate to you, if you haven't seen it already. David walks in to a camp full of people, and their job is to go and fight, okay? And every last soldier in that army is cowering. They're hiding. They are afraid. And so David steps in and he says, there's a problem. And just like I said, sometimes acknowledging it is the first step. He just lays it out, doesn't he? David's like, that guy is taunting you. That guy is mocking you. That guy is saying he's bigger than your army and bigger than your God, and he just made a gesture I'm not going to repeat. You're going to let that happen? I can't let that happen. David names the problem. And then he does something else that's amazing. And this is the something else that can help us not feel like if we name the problem, we're defeated, but move forward. David recalls what God has done for him. David says, listen, I watch sheep, and God's with me when I watch those sheep. And sometimes bears come to eat my sheep, and I wrestle them down because God's with me. And sometimes there are lions that come to attack the sheep, and I slay them because God's with me. David doesn't say, I am a beast slayer! Witness my power! He points to the power of God. God has done this in the past. If I recall, God has been with me here. Why can't God be with me here? David names the problem. He faces it. He's brave. And to move forward, he recalls how God has been with him. And because of that, he's able to slay the giant. He's able to take down the mighty warrior. He's able to, are you ready for this? Conquer the giant problem that was in front of him. I don't know what it is in your life. I don't know what you're facing right now. I don't know what you're worried about coming up this year. I don't know what you're having to deal with that you're in the midst of. But I know sometimes we just want to turn our back to it and we want to try and hold together where we are because we're afraid to face it. Maybe you've lost a loved one and that hurts a lot. And you know routine is going to be different. And you know that life day to day won't look the same. And that's hurting you. But it's too hard to say to someone how much it hurts. Be brave. Turn and face it. Can you recall when God has been with you, when times were good, and when that person was with you, and how you were blessed? Because that same God is going to walk with you. Maybe it's a change of job, or maybe it's loss of income, or something else, and you're like, how's this going to work now? Name it, and turn and face it. Remember the God that blessed you with whatever you had to begin with, that God is still there with you. The circumstances may feel different, and maybe they've changed. God does not change. The confidence that you had to go about life before, if you trusted in God, that same God is still with you. Name the problem. Recall what God has done, and you can carry forward, trusting in that same God. For myself, I think about the United Methodist Church, not this specific United Methodist Church, but the greater United Methodist Church. And I spend a lot of time sometimes being angry about, and sometimes being sad about, and sometimes worrying about the United Methodist Church. In general, globally, is at a point where we've just created conflict over a topic and it looks like it's going to divide us eventually. And so, of course, I've been praying about that and I've been gearing up with my bronze spear and my bronze... I've been praying about this situation and just taking it to God and saying, here's what makes me angry and here's what makes me sad and God, I know a change is coming, but are you in this, God? And so I share this with you again for what it's worth, just to back up what I've been trying to illustrate and tell you what I've found. I was praying the other day specifically about this, and just, God, what's going to happen? God, what's going to be? God, how will this look? God, are you in this? And I'd always try, I'm not always good at, but I always try to start my prayers with gratitude, with just, here's what I know you've done, God. And usually it's, God, thank you for this, thank you for this. Okay, let's get down to business. Here's what I need, God. This day I was like, thank you for this. And, you know, I know you've given me this. And by the way, I saw that you did this the other day, and that was amazing. And I want to give you thanks for this. And I recalled a, you know, really specific instance I had fun with. I'm like, thank you for that. And I thank God for this congregation. I did in my prayers. I was like, thank you for this church and for the people that are in it. And before I knew it, I had spent so much of the prayer time that I had allotted giving gratitude. I'm like, oh God, I didn't even get to the big worry. And I had, again, whether you want to say God spoke, or you want to say the switch flipped in me, or you want to say I just had a moment of awareness, whatever you like to call it. Like, I am the God who provides. Devin, for all the things that you just named, I've provided them. In that moment of prayer, what I heard was, Devin, look how I have been with you. I am the God that provides. And it just helped me know, whatever comes next, God will still be the God that provides. So again, I don't know where you're at, and I don't know what you're facing, but I know this, you will not move forward running from it. You will not move forward denying it. But if you're brave enough to turn and face it, the same God that has gotten you this far will absolutely walk with you and even give you a fullness of life moving forward. That's the God that David believed in. That's how I understand God today, and that's the God that is with you. Our biblical passage that I chose, it says, God did not give us a spirit of fear, but a spirit that gives us boldness or confidence or power, however you like the translation. God did not promise to be with you and then give you a spirit that's just going to like abandon you and run and cause you to panic. Those are things that are not helpful. Those are not the things of God. God gave us a spirit of power. And if you will turn and face what you need to face, God and his spirit of power will be with you. Would you pray with me? God, I'm thankful this morning, again, because of your presence. But I'm thankful because there are people here and there are people in this community and there are people everywhere that don't know what's next. But you do, God. And you promise if we will just trust in you, we can slay the giants in our lives. We can find purpose and meaning and belonging, and you will be with us. Help us to be brave. In the midst of changes and in the midst of trials and in the midst of life going differently than we planned, help us to turn to you and to face the things that we need to with your spirit of power with us. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.